And welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and I am your host. You're watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, we have a lot of things to get into tonight. As you know, this time of year, it is all football all the time. So we're going to be talking about the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. And we'll also be talking about everyone's favorite segment, What Are You Drinking Tonight? But first, I do want to get into a couple of things before we start those two topics. I watched round two, the second match of the TGL. That's the Tiger Woods Rory McIlroy Indoor Golf League that put on display last night. This is Wednesday night I'm recording. You will receive the podcast episode on Thursday. So last night I watched Tiger and his mates, Kevin Kisner and Max Homa, take on the LA-based team. I forget what they were called, their official title. But it was consisted of Colin Morikawa, Sahith Theegala, and Justin Rose. I got to tell you, folks, I'm still intrigued by the whole TGL format. I think that it has a lot of potential, and it has a chance to really cover some ground between the beginning of the year, early January, through the first quarter of the year, right before the Masters and the rest of the golf season starts. But there are a couple things that I have some issues with that I would like to see addressed moving forward. Obviously, you're not going to be able to address them that much this year. It's the inaugural season. But moving forward, I would hope they would take some of these things into consideration. I would like to see some closer matches, obviously. The inaugural match was a blowout of the Bay team versus the New York area team. And last night, Tiger and his mates got blown out, I think 12-1, by the Los Angeles team. It is hard to make this format work, as far as I'm concerned, unless there are competitive matches. Now, it's great to have fun. It's great to kind of replicate the experience on the golf course with your buddies on a nationally broadcast platform like ESPN. ESPN, I believe, is carrying the inaugural season of TGL throughout its entire season. But I would like to see some of these matches be closer. Again, it's only been two airings. You can't kill them. I mean, you know, even the NFL has blowouts early in its season. You know, not every game or every match is going to be a great game or a great match. I understand that. I get that. But if there is not a competitive match in TGL, I think it makes it very hard to continue to watch. There's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, let's be honest. Most PGA golfers, if you look at them in the lexicon of any athletes in any sports, generally speaking, they don't have, this is Tiger included, by the way, and I'm a huge Tiger fan. Who isn't? But most PGA golfers don't have the most compelling personalities to begin with. So to see them, quote unquote, joke around and, quote unquote, rib each other, it's not exactly like going to a Kevin Hart concert. I'll put it like that. Some of that ribbing falls a little flat. In my opinion, just based off of watching it. And again, I watched part of the first match. I watched part of the second match. I think they need closer matches to make it more compelling. I'm also a little confused, to be absolutely honest, by some of these team names and some of their affiliations. Now, I just found out last night and did a little research on it earlier today about some of these team owners and, you know, who are behind these teams. Why did I do that research? Well, because as part of their component to launching this league, they interviewed the team owner of the Los Angeles clubs, and that was Serena Williams and her husband, I think Alexis, I believe is his name. Look, you have big-time people and big-time money behind each of these teams on the ownership front. Apparently, the owner of the Boston team is the Fenway Park Corporation. The owner of the Atlanta team, I believe it's called, what do they call the Atlanta? Who knows? I think they're called the Atlanta Golf Club. Justin Thomas and his group. Arthur Blank owns that club. The owner of the Bay team that was on the inaugural week with Xander Schauffele and now I remember the Shane Lowry, because I wrote it down. Shane Lowry and his group, that's Steph Curry and another essentially Bay Area private hedge fund. The owners of these teams are big deal entities, which is fine. Have nothing against that. I would just like to see a little bit more affiliation between the owners or the ownership group and the members that they have on their team. I mean, wouldn't it be fun to see a Texas-based golf team in TGL that consisted of Scottie Scheffler and anyone else who happens to live in Texas to compete? Or if you're not going to do that, let's just do memberships, right? Let's think about the memberships. There almost every golfer of note lives in Florida to begin with anyway, unless they live in Texas or Arizona or California. So if you want to have representative teams, have them represent their country clubs that they are members of, whether it's Seminole or Jupiter or Lake Nona or you name it, Riviera, wherever. Have them represent the clubs that they are members of so that I don't get, let me give you an example. So that I don't get the Boston Common Golf Club that has team members. Keegan Bradley, makes perfect sense. Rory McIlroy, I don't think of Boston and Rory McIlroy in the same sentence usually, but he is Irish, so you can make a tangential connection there. But the other two members of the Boston Common Golf Team are Hideki Matsuyama and Adam Scott. Are you allowed to get free agents like baseball? Absolutely. That's fine. I would just like to see a little more uniformity in some of these team compositions. But that's neither here nor there. That's one man's desire, and that man would be me. At the end of the day, it will not make or break the format. But I do think we need to see a little bit more competitive golf, even if it's indoors on a simulator, happening in the TGL. Now, I'm a big fan of boosting new efforts. So, again, I think it has a chance to be actually a nice bridge between the early part of the golf season and also going into the first major of the year, which is the Masters. but got to be a little bit more competitive. Hopefully, these next 4 weeks will provide a little bit more competition between the groups involved in the TGL. So there's that. I also want to do a little recap of this past week's wild card weekend. Folks, I want to tell you, I enjoyed all the games in wild card weekend of last week. I really did. Even the blowouts, even the non-competitive games, I watched almost every single minute. Look, for me, a game doesn't have to be compelling in the postseason to tell a story. And that's what happened this past week. Stories were told. We talked a little bit last week about who would get the most heat if they lost. Mike Tomlin or Lamar Jackson. We talked about that in the instance of one game. But this past week, on Wild Card Weekend, there were stories that were told throughout every single game. And there were players who were hurt by losing. There were coaches who were hurt by losing. And there were franchises that were hurt by losing their games on Wild Card Weekend. And to me, that was incredibly compelling. And I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, who qualified for being hurt the most in each of those categories for the last week in Wild Card Weekend. But let's go through the games in order, and I'll give you my thoughts on every single game that occurred. Now, Chargers-Texans. It was a sloppy game. It was full of turnovers. It wasn't crisp. It wasn't clean. And I think the answer to the first question, which player was hurt the most, is very obvious. Justin Herbert. Look, I'm not here to run anybody down. I'm a positive person by nature. And I root for people to succeed. I don't root for people to fail. But I will say this. Herbert was bad in the game. It wasn't completely his fault, the reason they lost the game. I think that they obviously could have run the ball more. Again, I think I told you last week, I haven't seen the Chargers play all year. But to give, I think their running back only had, J.K. Dobbins? Not J.K. Dobbins. Oh, my gosh. The former Baltimore back. I'm not gonna turn it into Mookie Blaylock versus, the Dodger player, who was fantastic. But they should have run the ball more, I think. The Los Angeles Chargers, they should have run the ball more. Take a little pressure off of Herbert. But it's inescapable. Herbert was not good in the game, and you can't perform the way that he performed and be considered this quote-unquote great quarterback. I mean, clearly, Justin Herbert is a talented thrower of the football. I give you that all day. But it's strange to me that he gets as much support in the national media as he does, having kind of a limited record of success. They had a 27-point lead against Jacksonville a couple of years ago in the playoffs, which was Herbert's debut game. Was it his debut game? I don't know. But it was his first year in the playoffs. It was either his first or second game. And they lost that to Jacksonville. They let Jacksonville come all the way back. Herbert didn't make a play with a 27-point lead to actually get his team over the finish line. And I got to say, I'm not comparing these two players as far as character is concerned, because one is considered a great quarterback whom the future can be built around. That's Justin Herbert. And the other was considered a quarterback with tremendous arm talent, but a horrible attitude and a franchise killer. And that quarterback was Jeff George. I think in some ways, Herbert has a little bit of Jeff George in him in that he can make so many different throws, but does he have the ability to win big games when it counts? Again, I'm not comparing Jeff George to Justin Herbert in terms of character and in terms of being able to, you know, hurt or help a franchise. But when Jeff George was drafted, everyone and their mother thought that he had one of the best arms in the history of the NFL, coming into the NFL. And it just turns out he wasn't a great teammate, apparently, and wasn't a great team player or franchise builder. And I think in some ways, Herbert has a little bit of that in him, in that he has the ability to do anything he wants with the football. But that doesn't necessarily, arm talent doesn't necessarily equate into winning games. And it's early in his career, but it's not day one. We're starting to develop a sample size on Justin Herbert. And he needs to win games that count in the postseason. And he has had trouble doing that. The other thing about Justin Herbert, I think, and I'm going to be completely honest, which bothers some people being me, but I'm not the only one, is that some of his supporters in the sports media excuse every issue that comes up that Justin Herbert has to confront in order to promote him as this quote-unquote great quarterback. I'll give you a perfect example, right? I used to watch Peyton Manning when he was at Tennessee. And I saw all the struggles against Steve Spurrier's Florida teams. And I saw the fact that, you know, Tennessee wins the national championship with T. Martin the year after Peyton leaves. And that Peyton, as great as he was, does not win the Heisman because Charles Woodson wins it from Michigan. Defensive player, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I get it, right? And it's easy to quote-unquote hate on Peyton Manning. But to be fair, I have nothing against Peyton Manning as a player. What bothered me about Peyton Manning is the people who supported him in the sports media. It was always someone else's fault. It was never Peyton's fault. And I think we just have to be honest about these things. Peyton didn't play well in some of those games against the Patriots. Before he did. Peyton didn't play well against the University of Florida when he was in Tennessee. Sometimes you have to forget how much you like a guy or a person or a player personally and just evaluate them objectively based off of what they do on the field. And so many instances, I believe, there are examples of the sports press kind of carrying the water for or excusing poor performances of players that they deem press friendly or good guys or a great role model. And they don't hit them the same way that they hit people that they are either ambivalent about or people that they don't like. So I just think you have to be honest about these things. And I have nothing against Justin Herbert, myself, personally. I don't know Justin Herbert. I've never met Justin Herbert. But I do think he has to play better in these bigger games. That's just a point in fact. Now, CJ Stroud, he did what he had to do when he had to do it. It's almost the polar opposite of what Herbert displayed in that game last Saturday. The Texans weren't world beaters. They weren't great. But when push came to shove, they showed up. They answered the bell. And that's what you want out of not only your quarterback, but out of your team. And good for them. They did a great job. They were not world beaters by anybody's definition. But when it came time to make a play, they were able to make not one play, but multiple plays. So I give them a ton of credit for that. Moving on. The next game, obviously, wild card weekend was Steelers-Ravens. Boy, oh boy, I got to tell you, I thought this would be a much more competitive, a much more intense game than it actually was. And I could not have been more wrong. Pittsburgh looked like they were in a preseason game, the way they showed up. It was a bad job. Not only by their defense, primarily, but their offense didn't really set the world on fire either. Now, subsequently, we've learned that George Pickens, the tremendously talented receiver, I believe from the University of Georgia, showed up, quote unquote, late to the game. Who knows what their routine is, but apparently he arrived at the stadium around 2 hours before kickoff, which is, from what I am hearing, late. I don't know, guys. I mean, folks, George Pickens is a tremendously talented receiver. I don't know if he's a head case or not, but he can help almost any team the moment he steps on the field. Sometimes you have to live with these things. Sometimes you don't. I don't know enough about it. I'll do some research over the summer, find out, da, da, da. But if the Steelers are going to move on from George Pickens, sign me up for the ability to sign him. That guy can play football. But going to our second category, the coach who was hurt the most by losing in wildcard weekend, obviously, was Mike Tomlin. Coach Tomlin, we can make all the excuses in the world for him, and I'm willing to do that. I'll tell you, he hasn't had a quarterback in 10 years of any note who can play. This includes the last few years of Ben Roethlisberger. But that being said, you cannot lose 5, 6, however many games in a row in the playoffs. You just can't. And I don't think that the Steelers were listless per se. I think they just ran into a very good Baltimore team that made them look like they had a lack of effort. But that being said, you have to be better. And you have to find a way to win the games. If you're Mike Tomlin, you have to find a way to win games. I mean, let's be fair. You just do. It was a poor showing. And I think they got it going kind of in the second half, obviously, with the offense started to take off a little bit. But that defense couldn't stop anyone. Anyone being Baltimore, Lamar, Derrick Henry, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely. I mean, they couldn't stop anyone. Now, I will tell you this. I was a little worried about Baltimore simply because in the second half, after running the ball down Pittsburgh's throat, Coach Harbaugh, I guess, and Greg Romans decided to start throwing the ball as they opened the second half, which to me makes no sense. Throw the ball when you need to. Throw the ball when you have to. But what you were doing got you this big lead. Don't get cute and start trying to throw the ball in the second half and let Pittsburgh back into the game, which is kind of what they did, in my opinion. This will be a test for them this coming week, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Look, Lamar showed you why he is the leading candidate, in my opinion, for MVP of the NFL this season. He was practically unstoppable. He was dynamic. He showed great decision making. It was almost impossible to, he's almost impossible to defend over four quarters if he's playing his game. I didn't say he's unbeatable, but he's almost impossible to defend if he's playing his game over four quarters. So we all know that there is a reckoning coming, and that reckoning comes for more than one team this coming Sunday night. But again, we'll talk about that in just a moment. Good win for Baltimore. Nice win to get under their belts. They're moving on. The next game was Broncos-Bills. Now, I told you I thought that the Broncos were going to be a little bit of trouble and that the Bills should win the game and they probably would win the game, but the Broncos could be trouble. At the end of the day, the Broncos just didn't make enough plays. And let's be fair. Let's be absolutely honest. As much as they ran the ball and as good as James Cook and others were in the game, the thing you love about Josh Allen is that he makes every single play his team needs when it's time to make those plays. I mean, he's a much, now, don't get me wrong, all right? I'm going to say this, but don't take it the wrong way. He's a much better version of what C.J. Stroud did against the Chargers in his game against the Broncos. Obviously, he's a better quarterback than C.J. Stroud. But what Allen did, he doesn't make every single play, every single time he needs to make a play, but he makes them most of the time. And that's the issue with the Buffalo Bills. They can lean on their running game all day long, but when they need to pull a rabbit out of the hat, they have Josh Allen in the backfield ready to make a throw, a run, a pass, a decision that can actually win them the game. He's a tremendous player, and he's had a tremendous season. That's why this coming Sunday's matchup is going to be must-see TV. I can't wait to watch it, and it's really the way it should be. Broncos have a very, very, very bright future, I think, ahead of them. Knicks played well-ish, especially for a rookie on the road. But they have a young team, and they're going to get better. And I believe in their coach, Sean Payton. I think they have a lot of room to grow. And I think even in their division, they're going to be trouble moving forward. So, next game. Eagles, Packers. Well, I got to tell you, it was another sloppy game. And to be fair, the Eagles did what they had to do. I'm not worried about the Eagles, offensively or otherwise. Jordan Love, whom I like as a quarterback, is just so up and down. Sometimes you just never know what you're going to get from him. I think he has all the talent in the world. But who knows what Jordan Love is going to show up from game to game, from series to series, from quarter to quarter. That being said, I'll tell you one person I am not worried about, even with the stats that were recorded against Green Bay, and that is one Jalen Hurts. Folks, I'm going to tell you, I'm not worried about Jalen Hurts, and I'll tell you why. Jalen Hurts, his biggest problem is that there is a lack of consistency, and he is never as consistent as you want him to be, performance-wise, you being me. But I do know what he is capable of. I saw Jalen Hurts in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. He was the best player on the field. He probably should have won the MVP and probably would have won the MVP if he hadn't fumbled for a fumble six going the other way at the second in the second quarter of that game. If Jalen doesn't fumble that ball, the Eagles probably win that Super Bowl. It's really as simple as that, in my opinion. That being said, I've seen him play well in other games, so I know what he's capable of. Would I like to see that week in, week out? Absolutely. But that's not where Jalen is with his game right now. And thankfully, we have the safety blanket of one, Saquon Barkley. Let me get that out without sneezing again. So I think that the Eagles are going to be just fine. They did what they had to do. It doesn't matter how the game looks, what the score is, as long as you win the game, that's really all that counts at this point. And I'm going to tell you why that's all that counts at this point. Think of some of the great teams in the history of this league, the NFL. The one team that comes to mind to me are the Rams, the 1999, I believe, St. Louis Rams with Marshall Faulk, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Azir, I forget the third receiver's name. Kurt Warner, obviously, was a quarterback. Trent Green got hurt in the preseason. And that team was, quote unquote, the greatest show on turf. They blew people out during the course of the regular season. And what happened during the playoffs and the Super Bowl? They won games, but not the same way they did in the regular season. This is a team that was 2 yards away from losing to the Tennessee Titans in the Super Bowl to win their first and only championship in St. Louis. Think about the Kansas City Chiefs. That first year, they break through after losing to the Patriots in the AFC Championship the year before to get to their first Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes. They were blowing people out with the Cheetah, Kelsey, Kareem Hunt. And they were down in that Super Bowl most of the game until making a couple of tremendous plays in the fourth quarter. So it doesn't matter how you win or if you look like you look like in the regular season. The only thing that matters at this time of the year is that you win the game. And that's exactly what the Philadelphia Eagles did. On to the next one. So, Commanders, Buccaneers. Boy, this was a great game. And I got to tell you, the Washington Commanders are going to be good for a long time, in my opinion. They have a quarterback who's only going to get better and is only going to make them a contender from now until the end of his time with that team. Dallas, I don't know what you're trying to do, but you better get some people in there. You better tighten your chin strap because the Eagles are going nowhere. The Commanders are going nowhere. Who knows about the Giants? But Dallas, you got to get on your horse. I got to say it. I can't kill Dan Quinn for going for it on fourth down as often as he does because he has a quarterback in Jaden Daniels who can make plays when it's time to make the plays. He is, for a rookie, I know he's not 21 years old. He's 23, 24, whatever. He's played a lot of football in college, COVID, da-da-da. I get it. But he is tremendously poised. And I love watching the kid play. He is so fun to watch. And I think this next week's game, we'll get into it in just a moment, is going to be a tremendous watch. So he did a great job against the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay is a good football team. They just ran into the wrong opponent. There's nothing they or anyone else can do about it. But Washington's going to be a problem. They're going to be a problem for a long time moving forward. The last and final game of Wild Card Weekend was Vikings-Rams. And I want to tell you, we talked about who was hurt the most, player, coach, and franchise-wise, by losing during Wild Card Weekend. Well, to me, this is a no-brainer. The Vikings, as a franchise, were tremendously hurt by their loss to the Rams. You're talking about a 14-win team who goes into a neutral field, Glendale, Arizona, to play a Rams team that had been dealing with some horrific fires, some of which may have affected team members and personnel personally, but almost everyone knew someone who was affected by these fires, team and personnel-wise. And to have the Rams go out to Glendale and what's supposed to be a home team, it's supposed to be a home field, and dominate the Vikings the way that they did, how can you trust the Vikings? I mean, for the Vikings, I will believe the Vikings can win the next big game after they win it. And I have an affinity for the Vikings. I went to school in Minnesota, went to college in Minnesota. So I'm not against them. I actually have a soft spot for them. But boy, oh boy, you have to find a way to win some of these games. I mean, you lost to Case Keenum. You lost with Case Keenum at quarterback. You lost with Randall Cunningham at quarterback in 98. You lost with Kirk Cousins a couple of years ago at quarterback. I mean, what do the Vikings have to do to prove that they can actually win a big game in the postseason? I can answer that question. They have to win a big game in the postseason. The Minneapolis Miracle doesn't count because they didn't get to the Super Bowl that year. Stephon Diggs not, being apologies to Stephon Diggs, who made an unbelievable play. I think that as bad as Tomlin was, Kevin O'Connell had the worst 2 weeks any coach could have in the NFL. But Tomlin still takes the crown for being hurt the most for losing his wild card weekend game. But as a franchise, Minnesota, you got to find a way to win some of these games. You have to find a way to win some of these big games. And I love Minnesota, but I got to be honest. Rams are a good team. They can be a handful for anyone. So I don't fault Minnesota for losing to them. I just fault Minnesota for losing. All right. Folks, as always, don't forget to like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies. We have audio versions of this podcast, Spotify, Apple Music, all those podcasts. Tune in. Definitely check us out there. And obviously, we're on all the socials, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, X. So follow us, like, subscribe, spread the word. All right, so let's talk about this week's games. There are 4 games in the divisional week of playoffs. Texans, Chiefs, let's take them in order. Look, I believe the Texans are going to show up for this game. I believe they're going to be prepared for this game. I also believe that it's going to be hard to see the Chiefs not winning by 2 touchdowns. Look, the Chiefs have been off for a couple of weeks, at least, if you look at the starters. They're getting healthy. I believe Isaiah Pacheco is going to be back, among others. Andy Reid's record after byes is tremendous, going all the way back to Philadelphia. It's hard for me to see the Texans winning this game, even though I believe they're going to show up and do their thing. But I think the Chiefs are going to win this game, and I don't think it's going to be close. Game two will be Commanders-Lions, and I got to be honest. I look at this game the same way that I look at Broncos-Bills last week. I think the Commanders are a live underdog here. I think they actually could win the game outright. Forget about covering. I think they have something special. I think if they can keep the Detroit run game in front of them, which is a real challenge, and which Commanders are not known for being good against the run, but if they can keep the Detroit run game at bay, I think they have a puncher's chance at beating Detroit in Detroit. But let's be fair. The Lions are supposed to win the game. The Lions likely will win the game. So let's go ahead and say that the Lions will win, but I think it is going to be an exciting game in some ways. I mean, obviously, Jaden Daniels is the real deal. I think there's going to be more pressure, obviously, on Detroit than there was on the Bills. Even the Bills were only up 10-7 at the end of the first half. But they didn't panic. They're like, we're the Bills. They did what they had to do and blew the Broncos out in the second half. I mean, it was a massacre, punctuated by several good plays by the Bills. Same thing could happen with Detroit and Washington. But I think Washington will be in the game before they lose. Rams-Eagles. Folks, as good as the Rams are, I don't believe that they match up well against the Eagles. I think the Eagles are going to take care of business. I think Saquon is going to do his thing with or without the focus on the run by the Rams. I think Saquon is going to do his thing. I think Jalen's going to be better this week than he was last week. He doesn't have to be Dan Marino, Jalen, in this game. He just has to make enough throws and enough plays. AJ will eat. Devontae will eat. Dallas Goedert and even Grant Calcaterra will eat. I think the Eagles will win this game, and I don't think it'll be close. It's not a blowout, but I don't think it'll be close. It'll feel a lot like the Green Bay game, in my opinion. So the Eagles should be headed to the NFC Championship game. We shall see if I'm right or wrong. And finally, the capper. Ravens-Bills. Would you want it any other way? I'm telling you. If you are Lamar Jackson, if you're Josh Allen, what better setup could you ask for than to go through this run you're about to go through now? The winner of this game, Ravens-Bills, will probably have the pleasure of rolling into Kansas City to try to beat the two-time defending AFC champion Chiefs for the right to go to the Super Bowl. Would you want it any other way if you're the Bills? Would you want it any other way if you're the Ravens? I mean, Mahomes has been the ghost. He's been the Grim Reaper. He's been the thorn in everyone's side, essentially, since he came into the league. With the possible exception of Tom Brady, and even Brady got a little lucky. He'll tell you Mahomes, what kind of player Mahomes was. So, look, these are the top two candidates for the MVP. They are both tremendous players and have had tremendous seasons. Let's settle it on the field. Let's see who plays best when it counts most. Now, I thought CBS did a tremendous job in their broadcast talking about Josh Allen's tremendous postseason record. He has played incredibly well. It's kind of amazing he hasn't gone to a Super Bowl as well as he's played. He's played incredibly well in the postseason. A ton of touchdowns, very few interceptions. And for some reason, his team has not gotten to the Super Bowl. I think you could almost ask the same question of either quarterback who loses this game, Ravens Bills. If you can't win this season, when can you win? I mean, there is a window for opportunity. Ask Joe Burrow. Now, the Bengals are going to be back. They'll be back slugging it away as always. But sometimes these windows close before you realize they're going to close. And I think this is an hugely important game for both Lamar and Josh to have the right to face, presumably, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs for the right to go to the Super Bowl. It is going to be a tremendous game. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's a 50-50 game, in my opinion. I think it's a coin toss. I got the Ravens in this game winning. We shall see what happens. Should be awesome. Folks, this is the point of the program where I get to ask you my favorite question every week. And the question is, what are you drinking tonight? Well, folks, I can tell you, tonight I am drinking Smooth Ambler Founders Cask Strength Bourbon. Series 2022 Batch 2. Folks, I'm going to give you some info about this bourbon. Now, they also make a rye as well. But I'm telling you, let me give you the name again officially. It is the Smooth Ambler Founders Cask Strength Series 2022 Bourbon, Batch 2. This is distilled and bottled by Smooth Ambler Spirits Company, which is located in Maxwellton, West Virginia. Now, I'm going to be honest. I don't know a whole lot about West Virginia. I know the Greenbrier is down there, which is a wonderful golf course and resort. I know there are coal mines in West Virginia, but outside of that, I don't know a whole lot about West Virginia. This particular bourbon is 6 years old. I believe it has a number 4 char on the barrels that they age it in. It is 62% ABV, which makes it 124 proof. And we got this bottle. This bottle right here for $55. The mash bill is 71% corn, 21% rye, 8% malted barley. Folks, I'm going to tell you, Smooth Ambler lives up to its name. It's smooth. It's spicy, but not overly spicy. I got to tell you, when you drink this bourbon, forget about whether you drink it neat, whether you drink it on the rocks, whether you drink it with water, whether you drink it in a highball. Forget all of that. Let's just talk about the juice in the bottle. I'm telling you right now, One of the main reasons that I drink higher proof bourbons, whiskey, and alcohol is because anyone can make a 92 proof, 88 proof, 96 proof whiskey taste smooth. To me, craftsmanship shows up when you can do that over 100 proof. And this is an excellent example of craftsmanship. Folks, this bourbon is very, very smooth. It does not drink like 124 proof. It just doesn't. It's definitely a candidate for Whiskey of the Year, even though we just started 2025. But I can tell you right now, it's an impossibly good value at $55 a bottle. Run, don't walk. Pick this up whenever you get a chance. I'm telling you, you will not be disappointed. What are the flavor profiles? I mean, orange, cinnamon, spice. Who cares? It's drinkable. And it's unbelievably good. Especially for $55 a bottle. Do yourselves a favor. Smooth Ambler. Founders Cask Strength Series. Bourbon. You may not be able to get batch 2, but I'm sure batch 1 and batch 3 in whatever edition, 23, 2024, 2028 is going to be just as good. These guys in West Virginia are doing their thing with their bourbon. I'm going to try their rye. I'll put that on an episode at some point later this year. But I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this Founders Cask Strength Series. Smooth Ambler. Here's to you. Well done. All right, folks. That is the show for tonight. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. As always, we want to remind you, we have audio versions of this podcast on various platforms, as well as the video versions that you know are on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, the whole nine. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Folks, stay well. Folks, LA, we haven't forgotten about you. You stay strong. You keep doing what you got to do. You're going to rebuild. You're going to be back bigger and better than ever before. We believe in you and we love you. Otherwise, as always, we will see you on the first tee.